It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
That seems to me like government is establishing a religion.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
If you give people rights, women's rights, gay rights, whatever, there can't be equal rights if there's special rights.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Surveys show that people still really prefer freedom versus force.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. You can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. Sign up for our weekly newsletter and go over to Facebook and give us a like. We would greatly appreciate that as well. We've got a great show planned for you today. We'll talk with Chris Cantwell in this first segment about entrepreneurial opportunities here in the Colorado. And then in the third and fourth segment, we're looking forward to a conversation with Professor John Ellis. He is the Professor Emeritus of German Literature at the University of California, Santa Cruz. And he will talk about campus culture and how it is seizing our streets and what we can do about it. So that will be a really interesting conversation as well. Always like to say thank you to this great team that I get to work with, the Crawford Broadcasting Team, as well as Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie. It's a great team to get to work with. And how are you doing this morning, Producer Steve?
I am present. I am locked and loaded.
Locked and loaded. Oh, okay. Well, I want to hear about that. But want to say thank you to our listeners as well. I really appreciate each and every one of you, and we are getting closer and closer to this I'm a Trumpster bus tour. Reggie and Johnny are working diligently on that, and so we're getting refocused on that, working to help them raise the $10,000 to wrap the bus. They have been financing this whole thing 98% with their own money, so we, the grassroots, need to step up and help them. And what you can do is go to I'm a Trumpster, that's imatrumpster.com, and contribute. For every $50, you'll get one of these really cool battle masks. And if you want me to drop those in the mail to you, let me know. Otherwise, we're going to have a party with the bus soon. Probably late July is what we're trying to get done. Then we've had a few little things that we've had to work out. But really appreciate it if you want to do something, because this is one of the most important elections of the history of America. Because if Donald Trump does not win this election, and realize you may not agree with him on everything, you may not agree with his style, but when you look at the policies of how he stands for everyday hardworking people, you know, lowering taxes, trying to get more money into our pocket. Before this COVID-19 thing hit, the economy was just, you know, really humming along. Unemployment was at record lows across the spectrum. And so this is, as Reagan said, this is really going to be a time for choosing. And the veil is off on what those choices are. Do we want the American idea of these ideas that all men are created equal with these inalienable rights from God of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness? Or do we want what we see over here from the Democrat side? The Democrat Party today is not the party of JFK. This has been taken over by, I mean, really, we're getting to Marxism as far as abolition of property and abolition of property rights and abolition of our Bill of Rights. And wanting to take away our individuality, that's one of the things that breaks my heart about this whole masking thing, is it takes away our individuality. And just from a practical standpoint, haven't the environmentalists been telling us it's very bad to be breathing in carbon dioxide, but yet now they want everybody to wear masks and just to breathe in their own carbon dioxide? It just doesn't make sense. So, Steve, you said that you're loaded, locked and loaded today. What's on your mind?
Well, maybe I oversold myself. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and jump in here. You know, as we look at these issues, how do you critically think? And you ask these questions that Rudyard Kipling asked. He says, what? What are they doing? Why are they doing that? When? How? Where? And who? And if you start to look at these different issues with those questions, it'll start to move you towards the truth. Ultimately, socialism comes down to force. And so look at these issues as freedom versus force. You know, why are they forcing this? Does it make sense? You have to ask all of those questions. And we are Americans. We're free thinkers, and we need to remember that, Producer Steve.
Well, you were discussing the importance of the election and the clear distinction between the two parties, you stop and you ponder, what is it that they're coming at you with, the left? And you think, all right, let's just look at that one particular topic and saying, is it good for us? Is it good for us in any possible way? If so, what is it? And I have yet to see it. I mean, I try to give them the benefit of the doubt, and anything that they are proposing, he's saying, is that good for this country? And, you know, defunding police, any of the absurdities that are coming out, you know, from that side of the spectrum, they're just not good.
The crime statistics in these major cities, they're on fire. And people are being killed. Police officers are being shot. Our communities, if they're not safe, you know, people are on edge. They can't have their businesses concerned. I know a lot of people are very concerned with the defunding of police and taking SROs out of schools, about even sending their kids back to school in the fall. And in fact, I think I heard yesterday that number is between 30% to 40% of parents that are considering not sending their kids back to school. And in a way, you know, after talking with Professor John Ellis, you know, what has been happening to our education system may be a positive thing on this whole COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption, is that, you know, we have been so concerned about what's been happening in academia. So maybe this is a positive, so that people are taking a look at what our kids are really being taught and reassessing how they're being taught, Steve.
And can I clean up my mess from yesterday, since I had a senior moment?
Which one?
You will pay dearly. The fact that the governor of Minnesota? Well, yes, requested money for Minneapolis, since I couldn't get my M geographic locations lined up. But his request has been turned down, and this is going to be fun to watch.
Well, and Patty was on that yesterday when you and I were trying to figure which M that was.
I almost said Milwaukee at one point.
Now, let's see. There's one other headline. Did you see this she had on here? De Blasio, I think, is asking for money as well, even as he's painting in front of Trump Tower, Black Lives Matter, yet he wants federal money for New York with all the crazy decisions that they've been making. You know, getting rid of plainclothes policemen in New York City, and crime's going up, and they can't figure out why, and now they want the feds to give them money. And when they go to the feds, that means that they want us to give them money, because they're borrowing it from, or they're taking it from other states, or they're borrowing it from our kids in the debt that we're taking on. So it's really kind of insidious. De Blasio is something else, Steve. I can't believe it.
What's the disorder that people have, where you're full on one day and then you're totally the opposite the next? Bipolar. I don't know how he thinks. I don't get how he thinks. The fact that you're down in the street, you're helping him put this message in the street in front of Trump Towers, and a couple days later, you're appealing to the federal government for assistance.
Yeah, it really doesn't. It doesn't make sense. That's for sure. Let's go through very quickly before we move on to, I think we'll be talking with Chris here in just a minute. Our inspiration quote for today is George Bernard Shaw. And he's known as, at his insistence, simply as Bernard Shaw. He was an Irish playwright, critic, polemicist, and political activist. His influence on Western theater, culture, and politics extended from the 1880s to his death and beyond. He wrote more than 60 plays, including major works such as Man and Superman, Pygmalion, St. Joan, and with a range incorporating both contemporary satire and historical allegory, Shaw became the leading dramatist of his generation, and in 1925 was awarded the Nobel Prize in Literature. He was born in 1856, and he died in 1950. First thing, this was a new word for me, and that was polemicist. And it is a person who engages in controversial debate. That would mean that we would actually be talking about issues and debating them. So apparently, George Bernard Shaw was very good at that. And he said, "Don't lose faith. Promise yourself that you will be a success story, and I promise you that all the forces of the universe will unite to come to your aid. You might not feel today or for a while, but the longer you wait, the bigger the prize. I thought that was a pretty interesting quote, Steve.
Well, what got my attention was right up front. Don't lose faith. I think that's where I'm struggling. I mean, my faith is solid, but my joy is taking a beating these days.
Well, and don't you think there's a difference between joy and happiness, though? I mean, I think one can be joyful even in very difficult circumstances. But so I think there's a difference between joy and happy. What do you think?
Well, I test myself, I quiz myself to on that very thing, saying, don't get so burrowed in on one thing that you're maybe, you know, just not understanding what the difference between those two words really is. You know, one is somewhat superficial. The other one is much more deep-rooted.
Well, that's for sure. And so, you know what? I think we're going to go to break early so that we can go through some of these other headlines. Before we do that, though, Hooters Restaurants is a great place to just kick back a little bit. I was actually up near the Wyoming-Colorado border and was driving back last night, and I saw lights on over at Coors Field. And I haven't been paying attention, but I think they're going to start playing baseball. Yes, maybe. Do you know, Steve?
I don't really know officially, because they've been kicking it back and forth. And the players union wants this and the owners want that. I don't know.
Well, they were trying the lights out last night at Coors Field. And I tell you
maybe it's just the facility people doing their thing.
Just making sure that it's working. But I think we're going to have some sports. I think we're going to have Avalanche here very soon. And Hooters Restaurants is a great place to watch all these games, since you probably can't go to the stadium to watch them or the arena. They have 5 different locations, and I would recommend that you try them out. Tomorrow is Wings Day, $15.99 for all the wings that you can eat. They have lunch specials Monday through Friday, 11 to 3 p.m., and then also they have beers of the month. So be sure and check out Hooters Restaurants and just kick back and maybe veg out for just a little bit. This is Kim Munson. We're going to go to break, and we'll be right back.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. And be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter as well. We'd appreciate it if you go over to Facebook and give us a like. And going through some of the headlines here that Patty has gotten for us. And just a quick note, Patty had immediately texted me when Steve and I were having our senior moments on which state was asking for the money from the federal government. It was Minnesota. And so far, the federal government has said no, which I think is a very good idea to say no. Anyway, Patty has put together some important headlines here. First of all, this is from the Gazette. And Colorado could take coronavirus patients from overtaxed Arizona hospitals where the pandemic is raging, Colorado Governor Jared Polis' office said Wednesday, July 8th. Arizona health officials said the state's daily case count spiked by more than 3,600 patients Wednesday, with 109,000 sick and there during the pandemic. More than 90% of Arizona's available intensive care unit hospital beds were in use on Wednesday. So Polis said that Colorado would take some of those patients, which I find most interesting. So kind of chaw on that for just a little bit. Another headline, Progress Now, which is one of the left-wing radical groups here in Colorado. And this is from Colorado Peak Politics. They broke the news recently that Progress Now Colorado received a taxpayer-funded forgivable loan between $150,000 and $350,000 as part of the COVID-19 PPP. And that was meant to provide relief for small businesses during the pandemic. Other liberal groups around the country also accepted the taxpayer bailout. But some of these organizations are returning the money after being criticized by lawmakers in their own party. Politico says the Florida Democrat Party was returning at least $780,000. Now, that was money that was supposed to go to small businesses, my friends. And the lawmakers criticized the acceptance of that money as highly questionable, if not illegal and unethical. And the party at that time immediately applied, for the loan, even though there was discussion at the time that the money should go to neither lobbyists nor political causes. Leading Colorado Democrats, including U.S. Senate candidate John Hickenlooper, U.S. Senator Michael Bennett, Governor Jared Polis, U.S. Reps Joe Neguse, Jason Crow, Diana DeGette, and Ed Perlmutter have not called for Progress Now Colorado to return the money. And they continue on. They say, it's disappointing that Colorado's liberal elite seem perfectly fine with a dark money liberal group like Progress Now Colorado stealing money from taxpayers to fund their far-left causes, but it's not surprising at all. Any thoughts on that, Steve?
Big sigh.
Big sigh.
Right? All right, just a few weeks ago, we had a primary here, and former governor and, what was that, Romanoff, what was his house?
Andrew.
Yeah, he was the Speaker of the House?
I think so.
Yeah, okay. And Hickenlooper won that primary. Even though it was right out front that there's several different things going on that point to the fact that the guy has issues with ethics. So here we are, all the names you just read off that aren't banding together and say, well, we better turn that money back in because it really was for another reason. Ethics just seems to be the hill to die on, I guess. And they're willing to go out there and say, we don't care.
Well, and that's why we have to talk about this, is to shed light on this, because, you know, over the years, the Democrat Party has tried to imply that they're the party of the working class, the party of the little guy. But as the veil is coming off on all this, we realize that that is not true, that there's really a disregard, almost a disdain for everyday people. I mean, you heard it when Hillary Clinton called half the population deplorable. There's this disdain for everyday hardworking people. Now, you know, we go get to the COVID-19 thing, which you and I, many people are starting to say, you know, this is probably going to dissipate and disappear after November 3rd, after the election. But this is being used right now. When we're talking with Stephen Kessler, you know, our young conservative scholar, he said that Marxism and socialism, ultimately, it comes down to getting rid of our individuality as well as abolishing private property. And so we've seen with the COVID-19 thing that this has really hurt our everyday businesses, our small mom-and-pop businesses, our small to mid-sized businesses. And so that is abolishing their private property. And then the government comes in, they do the PPP, which is supposed to help small businesses. And my gosh, you've seen these big businesses, these big nonprofits, in this case, this political organization, Progress Now, they've got the attorneys, they've got the accountants, they were first in line to get the money. And so I'm really pleased that journalists are doing their job, for example, here at the Gazette, this is Colorado Peak Politics, where they're shedding light on what is happening. This is what journalism is really supposed to do, then to put pressure on these organizations to, instead of doing the wrong thing, to do the right thing, Steve.
Oh, and let's not, you know, I think I bashed him yesterday, but I can bash him again today. Our friend Robert De Niro, who owns, I guess, a chain of restaurants, and he took quite a chunk of that PPP money too, even though he can't find two good words to say about the president.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. When it gets to green energy, you can see what kind of green energy that they're really, really interested in, huh?
Yes, there's what is really green.
Okay, let's continue on here. Denver, this is from the Denverite. They're planning to use federal COVID-19 relief funds to more than triple rent, utility, and mortgage assistance, saying they're trying to keep people housed as an eviction moratorium ends. City Council on Monday approved adding $5 million to a housing assistance fund that started the year with a budget of $2 million. In the past, grants paid up to 80% of the rental assistance. In the change approved by the City Council Monday, requirements that recipients pay a portion of their housing costs were dropped, and now 100% of their rent will be covered. Also on Monday, City Council approved an agreement for $2 million in federal housing and urban development COVID-19 relief funds to be used for shelter operations and to pay security deposits and rent payments to get people who've experienced homelessness into apartments and other support related to the pandemic for people experiencing homelessness. Steve, I tell you what, when people don't have any skin in the game, then we start to move away from the dignity of work, the dignity of you have something of value to trade for what I am giving you. And so the idea that what they're going to do, 100% rent assistance, what are these people going to be doing all day if they don't have to go out and work and try to help, pay for their rent? This is not a good thing. I really think if people are able-bodied, that instead of like at a food bank, if people are able-bodied, I think that they should actually help do some work for food that they might get from the food bank. I think that there should always be an exchange of value between able-bodied people. What do you think, Steve?
Well, here's a contrast between what we like to think is really happening, that the city is just stepping in and taking that sting of not having being able to handle rent in any way, shape, or form. And the assumption then, I guess, is that, well, okay, you're doing this for me. Meanwhile, I'm out there pounding the pavement, looking for the job that, it's going to help me be self-sufficient. That's, utopia. That's what we think is, or what we would like to think is happening. What you just said is probably more the reality of the situation. And there's a lot of people kicking back and saying, hey, this is okay. It's almost like, as the economy was starting to come back and people were faced with the decision, well, do I really want to go back to work or do I want to, do this PPP thing for a while?
Well, when we talk about fairness, how is this fair for that young couple that's trying to make sure that they pay their bills and that they are taking care of, being responsible for themselves, for their rent or their house payments, and they're out there really, really rubbing two nickels together to make sure that they're keeping it all together. Then over here, you're taking money from them in taxes that you're giving to someone else that they're not having to do anything to pay for their rent. They very possibly may be receiving unemployment. And as Patty has done in her research, and I've heard that there are people that are on unemployment right now that say, I'm not coming back to work because of that. How is it fair that one person over here is working and, really watching their budget and trying to make sure that they get through this pandemic, and over here, government is giving them their rent, giving them food, giving them unemployment.
Cell phone.
Ultimately, this is not going. Yeah, so ultimately, this is not going to work out very well. Let's go ahead through one other thing, and again, I know you're really giving Patty accolades on this because she was on this last week. We were talking about this, and that was what's going to happen with many of these office buildings in these major cities where companies are realizing maybe we don't have to have people go to the office. They can work from home, which that's going to create vacancies in these office buildings. And Patty said, they're going to start to convert those to apartments. And guess what? The Denver Business Journal just reported that Denver-based developer Nichols Partnership plans to convert a 10-story office building at the northeast corner of 12th Avenue and Lincoln Street, previously home to the Art Institute of Colorado, into a 194-unit micro-apartment community, according to a site development plan recently filed with the city. The project, known as Art Studios, will be comprised entirely of market-rate studio apartments, and the company is targeting attainable rents by creating smaller floor plans. The great thing will be is that you can cook your dinner and take your shower at the same time, Steve.
We come a long way. When I first got here as a civilian, and the Denver Tech Center was where my job was, there was a moratorium on the height of a building. Couldn't be more than two or three stories until they realized they were in direct competition with downtown. And all of a sudden, that little restriction went out the window. Now we're going to turn the corner here, and they realize that brick and mortar, we don't really need them anymore. We can work from home. So let's see where this goes.
Yeah, it could be interesting. That's for sure. Speaking, though, of the Denver Tech Center and beautiful offices with a beautiful view is Presidential Wealth Management. Jason McBride is on the line. How are you doing this morning, Jason?
Well, this morning, Kim, and lately I've had a beautiful view of my backyard while I'm working, but that's still not too bad either.
Well, that's for sure. And actually, so you're still working from home quite a bit, huh?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going around. Jason McBride, so opportunity in the market, what's happening?
Well, kind of, some interesting. Yesterday was kind of an ugly day, to be quite frank with you, Kim. The NASDAQ started off up 200 points. Gave it all back, had a big ugly reversal, and ended up down over 200. And that was on a pretty big increase in the volume as well. So we did see some pretty good size selling come in. Same thing basically for the Dow. It was up over 500. Gave almost all of it back, Kim, and ended up only 10 points higher. Also on heavier volume than yesterday. So, you know, I do talk sometimes about these distribution days when the market is down on heavier volume than the previous day, and then kind of give you a hint towards institutional selling. We don't have a big, huge problem with it yet, but we do have four distribution days recently on the Dow and S&P. We only have one on the NASDAQ, and it usually takes, you know, somewhere, you know, five, six distribution days over a fairly short period of time to turn the market's direction in a significant way from an uptrend to a downtrend. But yesterday, I think, was a little bit of an eye-opener, although it was only kind of one day out there.
Do you think it's because anticipation of earnings on some of these companies, or what do you think it is?
I think, yes. I think on the NASDAQ, these stocks have come so far, so fast, that a lot of them, it would take quite a long time for the earnings to grow into the price and some profit takings coming in. But, you know, real quick, Kim, we did have some decent earnings this morning. Citigroup and J.P. Morgan in the banking sector both had better than expected earnings, although they were far worse than last year's earnings in the same quarter. That'll help the financials a little bit today. But Wells Fargo, their earnings were far worse than expected, and they also chopped their dividend from 51 cents a share a quarter down to a dime. So that was an ugly report.
Oh, my goodness. So, well, Jason McBride, thank you. You know, people should reach you at 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600 to take a look at their portfolios. Jason, we will talk to you tomorrow morning.
Have a great show, Kim.
Thanks so much. We'll be right back with Professor John Ellis.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lorne Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lorne Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lorne Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lorne Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, kimmunson.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email us at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. We've got all of our upcoming guests as well as our podcasts and our op-eds. And go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. I am thrilled to have on the line with me Professor John Ellis. He's the Distinguished Professor of German Literature at the University of California, Santa Cruz. He's taught at universities in England, Wales, and Canada before joining UCSC in 1966, serving as dean of the graduate division in 1977 to 86. He's the author of 10 books. And Professor Ellis, welcome to the show. I'm just thrilled to have you here.
Well, it's very good to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
Well, we're going to talk about higher education and what that is doing. You had a piece recently that campus culture is seizing our streets. But before we do that, both producer Steve and I are somewhat curious about German literature. So tell us a little bit about that, Professor Ellis.
Well, that was the field in which I did my career. I mean, I was professor of German literature for about 30 years, it's a fascinating field. It doesn't have someone quite of the. Standing of Shakespeare, but it's close with Goethe, and it has certainly many other fascinating writers. Kafka, for example. I produced two long essays interpreting Kafka recently in the New Criterion. So I still work on German literature, and I did a couple of books on the German author Kleist, who probably is not too much known to English speakers, but you can easily get translations of his very famous volume of stories, which published 1810. They're wonderful stories. I mean, very few authors have packed as much punch into one single volume as Kleist did. It was a great thrill to be able to teach, say, Goethe's Faust, very, very famous play. And it's, great fun to introduce young students to literature of that quality.
Well, I'm clearly an old student, but I think that I need to check that out a bit. So fascinating. So, Professor Ellis, let's jump over here, though, to our subject for the day, and that is that campus culture is seizing our streets. And you started off with this question. How did radical ideas like abolishing or defunding the police move from the fringes to official policy seemingly overnight in cities like Minneapolis, Los Angeles, and New York? What has happened?
Well, those ideas have been promoted on college campuses. They've been bubbling up to the surface on college campuses for years. And the reason why you're getting extreme and dangerous, destructive ideas on the campuses is very simple. Over the last 50 years, you've gone from well-balanced campuses, right, that have politically both sides, the left and the right, both pretty strong, therefore very realistic, sensible debates on campus. You've gone from that to the present day, which is a one-party campus. Now, the problem with a one-party campus is that there's the other side is missing, but the other side is necessary to keep you sane. I mean, if only one party is present, then instead of you having to make your case in the presence of the other party, which means you've got to really be smart and you've got to be disciplined and you've got to make sure your ideas are defensible because the other side will pick them off, and trample them if they're not well formulated. Instead of that, ideologues on the left can say more and more and more extreme things, and there's no one there to correct them. There's no one there to pick off the weak ideas and keep you strong. My favorite quotation on this is John Stuart Mill, John Stuart Mill said this wonderful couple of sentences that just say it all. He said, "A party of order and stability and a party of progress or reform are both necessary elements of a healthy state of political life." And then he said, "It's in great measure the opposition of the other that keeps each of them within the limits of reason and sanity." Well, what's happening right now is that on the campuses, there's only one party, and so it's not being kept within the limits of reason and sanity by the other party. And so you get these dumb ideas like defund the police, which, I mean, you know, anyone with half a brain can see this would be a catastrophe, but not the left extremists on the campus. Now, the problem is that up to about 20 years ago, these ideas were bubbling up on the campus. But it was possible for people to say 20 years ago, well, this is so loony, so unrealistic, that the rest of the culture can just ignore these people. Well, the problem with that is that for the last 20 years, they've been teaching our young people. Now, to be sure, probably the majority of kids that go through college campuses look at these activists, political activists, radical professors, and laugh. But even if the majority do that, you've still got maybe 30-40% of kids who believe it, who believe this stuff. And off they go into the wider world, and we're seeing the results on the streets. People have been miseducated by very foolish, destructive people, and the ideas that they've absorbed on campus are now part of the mainstream culture that you and I see, with the completely disastrous results.
Well, it is disastrous from what I can see, and we're seeing destruction. It's so interesting to me that somehow destroying property has now become okay. And I had gone down to downtown Denver. It was right after Memorial Day when there were a number of the George Floyd protests. And primarily, many of the protesters that were arriving around 4 o'clock in the afternoon looked like suburban kids, college students, yeah. High school students,
yeah.
Which
yeah.
I found fascinating. What do you think about that?
Well, there's just no doubt about it that the young are being educated by people who are, politically spiteful and vengeful towards their political opponents. And I think most young people are able to keep their heads. But even if most people keep their heads, there's still this large minority that doesn't. And so when you get an event like the Floyd killing, you've got a whole bunch of radical activists ready to take to the streets and make trouble. And they really don't care very much what it is they're making trouble about. I mean, it was very noticeable that nobody stopped to say, is this one killing of one human being by another, does it have any wider significance? I mean, can we look at it and say it's part of a broader pattern? Nobody stopped to say that. I mean, they all just simply assumed that it was part of a broader pattern, but without any proof, without any evidence. And that's because the radical left was just really waiting for a chance to demonstrate and make trouble generally.
Well, and the media has really played into this as well. And, you know, when we start our show, I typically quote Rudyard Kipling, where he says, "I keep 6 honest serving men. They taught me all I knew. Their names are what and why and when and how and where and who." And I've always thought that education of our kids should start with many of those particular questions.
Yeah. No, Roger Kipling was a brilliant man. He formulated a lot of the basic principles you need. Basically, our kids really ought to be getting on campus, good grounding in how our civilization is made up. I mean, what its founding documents are, what the point of the Constitution is, why you need free speech, why you need order, and why you need to listen to other people, and so on. Kids are not getting that at all. I mean, if you now look in on the average college campus catalog, you can't find a course on the American Constitution on most of them. Well, I mean, to my mind, not having your children educated in the set of rules that governs the society they live in is a terrible, terrible gap in their education. No wonder they don't know how to behave.
Well, it seems as parents and as members of the community, we've been asleep at the wheel and let this happen. I recall when my kids came home from school, and initially I'm kind of like, boy, that doesn't seem right. But it took a little bit of time for me to realize that this indoctrination was going on. And it was finally then at that point, I decided to become involved in, well, I'd always been involved in my kids' education, but just to be involved in this battle of ideas that is raging out there right now, Professor Ellis.
Yeah, well, you're right. I mean, there is a real problem here in people just simply being willing to believe what's happening. I mean, it is so outlandish. I mean, I've had an awful lot of people over the years say to me, well, what you're describing sounds so absurd, I can't believe it. And I will say to them, well, I don't blame you. It is so absurd. It is almost incredible. The only problem is it's actually happening.
It is actually happening, for sure. Professor Ellis, let's go to break. This is Kim Munson, The Kim Munson Show, and I'm talking with Professor John Ellis regarding his piece, Campus Culture Seizes the Streets, and he is the Professor Emeritus of German Literature from, it's University of California, Santa Cruz, right? Do I have that right? I lost it off my screen here. Okay, so stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. You can sign up for our newsletter there. Be sure and give us a like over on Facebook. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. I'm thrilled to have on the line with me Professor John Ellis. And he has written a number of books. One that looks very fascinating as well is The Breakdown of Higher Education. And he is the Distinguished Professor of German Literature at the University of California, Santa Cruz. And what really caught my eye was this recent op-ed that was in the Wall Street Journal, that campus culture seizes the streets. And a couple of questions on this. A young educator that I know took a look at it and had a couple of questions. And one of them was that you said, then political pressure for female and minority faculty appointments led more young radicals to join the faculties. Where's your reasoning on that, Professor Ellis?
Well, yeah, that's a good point, because it's in the brevity of an op-ed in the daily newspaper means you can't explain everything, really in the fullest way. Now, the way it works is this, that there was political pressure on the campus to hire more women, more minorities. So the argument being that just aren't very many women, aren't very many minority professors. Now, inevitably, the people who were asking for that were left radicals themselves. I mean, the pressure came from them. And what that meant was they were in the forefront of the whole process of hiring of those people, too. So when the hiring process began, they were in the front line determining who was going to be hired. And what they did was to make quite sure that the people they hired were left radicals like themselves. And so that although, you know, an extra female faculty member, an extra minority faculty member didn't necessarily mean a left radical, it did mean that if left radicals were in charge of the process of hiring. And that is how, in fact, minority and female hiring did lead to an increase in left radicalism and towards the eventual prevalence, the eventual control of the campus by people of that kind. At the moment, there is no question that the controlling majority on the campuses is left radical. Not left, radical left.
Well, and the left radical is totally different. Like the Democrat Party of today is totally different than the Democrat Party of JFK. JFK actually advocated for reducing taxes. And so, you know, what has happened? This is no longer the party of JFK. This is something totally different. One other question, and again, this was in the op-ed. It was the next sentence. It said that a 1969 Carnegie Commission on Higher Education found that Democrats then outnumbered Republicans among faculty by 3-2. A 2018 study found that among professors at civilian liberal arts colleges, that same ratio is now 13-1, and it stands to rise as younger professors skew further leftward. What do you think about that? And this young educator was interested to know more about that, you know, that study on that ratio.
Well, the rise has been steady for 50 years. I mean, that 3-2 of 50 years ago, imagine that. I mean, there's a good healthy debate between the left and the right on campus. The left outnumbers the right, but only by 3-2. So there's plenty of conservative voices, and there's good, strong debate between the two sides. Now, by the end of the century, by 2000, the ratio is 5-1. So we're now in a heavy preponderance. By about 5-6 years later, the next study, it's 8-1. And the latest one's 13-1. Now, at 13-1, you've got practically a shutout. I mean, the 13 are dominant. The one that is there to oppose them is probably intimidated by the 13.
Sure.
Because the 13 is going to shut them down. But the worst thing about it was that the latest studies have also broken down the professoriate by rank so that full professors, that's the older ones, which really means the ones hired 20 years ago, they're running at something like, I think, about 8-1. But the most recent, the assistant professors who hired in the last couple of years and the associate professors, the hiring ratio, the ratios there are 48-1.
Oh, my gosh.
In other words, the hiring that's been going on in the last 5 years is at 48-1. Now, that is, you know, it's total shutout, basically. And it means that if you simply look ahead 10 years, with hiring going on at the ratio of 48-1, it's pretty clear you've got a complete and utter shutout of the right. Now, a shutout of the one party means, according to John Stuart Mill's principle, the other side, the one that's left, the radical left, will be utterly absurd, utterly insane in its attitudes and in all of its discussions, because it won't have that cleansing discipline of the other side. It won't have anyone saying, what you're saying is totally absurd for the following 10 reasons. And the absence of that on the campus, when you've only got one side, you will automatically veer into lunacy. And we're seeing it already, but it's going to get a lot worse if you go forward 10 years when you're hiring at 48-1. In 10 years' time, you're going to wind up with probably a ratio of, I don't know, 30-1, 40-1 maybe. And that will be a recipe for utter intellectual catastrophe. The rest of the society will be relatively sane. The academia, which is supposed to be more rational and more reasonable than the rest of the society, right? That's the whole purpose of it. It was supposed to be a place governed by reason, logic, intelligence, evidence. But what's really happening right now, because of the one-party campus, is that it's the other way around. It's the rest of the society that's relatively sensible and intelligent and governed by reason and logic. And the campuses are governed by extreme emotional ideas that have no logical backing whatsoever. People are just going to believe what they want to believe, and the whole question of analyzing issues has gone out of the window.
So, Professor Ellis, the question on the table is what to do about this. My thoughts, first and foremost, is we need to cut the spigot off. These kids that are taking on all kinds of college debt for this kind of an education, when they get out, what are they going to be, a community activist? And they have all this debt. And also here in Colorado, a big portion of our state budget goes to education. And, I mean, it's somewhat insidious that we tax ourselves to pay for education for kids to come out and not like their parents, not like their communities, and not like their country. So what do you think we should do? We've got about 4 minutes for you to tell us how to fix it all.
Well, look, you've got, as you say, parents pay a lot of money in tuition. Kids pay a lot of money incurring debt to go to college. State legislatures, through taxes paid by taxpayers, state legislatures appropriate funds for state universities. All those people have got to take a hard look at this and say to the universities, you've been thoroughly irresponsible. You've allowed a one-party campus to develop that is educationally a complete fraud and a catastrophe. And you have a very short time indeed in which to fire the political activists who are in your classrooms. They should never have been there. And bring those campuses back to health by making them no longer one-party campuses, but balanced places where both sides can be discussed. And if you don't do that, this is what parents, students, and legislators ought to be saying. You don't do it, you get no more money from us, and you'll be out of a job. Nothing less than that will work.
Well, and do you not think that with the COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption, that there is an opportunity for this discussion that we might not have had we not had COVID-19.
I'm absolutely convinced you're right. Because, well, for example, I mean, what's going on now is online learning. Now, you know, suppose someone's getting a history course online with his history professor, and it's a radical left historian promoting a view of the country. This is a horrible country, you know, with history of racism and so on. Suppose that kid were to investigate what is on the web, available on the web, courses in American history taught by distinguished historians of the older generation. If that kid investigates those genuine history courses taught by really great scholars, he's likely to see the difference. And he's likely to realize that what he's getting is not an education, but it's simply an indoctrination by very silly people who really aren't worth his time and trouble. So I hope that's going to happen.
Well, and there seems to be a disruption as well with President Trump coming out and saying that if you are not offering in-person classes, then so immigrants, or not immigrant students, but foreign students, then might need to find a different campus or go back to their country. What's your quick thoughts on that, Professor Ellis?
Well, that's a political question that's a difficult one. And, you know, I think it depends a bit on the particular student and what they're, and what they're studying. But I have some sympathy with the notion that we should be, first and foremost, looking after our own, you know, our own U.S. citizens. And in a crisis situation like COVID, that should be even more so. So I don't disagree with, in general, with the spirit of this. I'd just be a little bit cautious about individual cases, that's all.
Okay. And Professor Ellis, we're just about out of time. What is the final thought that you would like to leave with our listeners today?
Well, that the public, this matter is in the hands of the public. If the public looks at what's going on the campus and says, this is just not good enough, you're not getting any more money for this until there's fundamental change, and the one-party campus is abolished. I mean, that's anything less than that is not going to do. The public has got to rise up and say, this won't do.
Well, we have a lot of work to do as the public, as good citizens, and this is certainly one of them. So, Professor John Ellis, thank you so much. This has been a fascinating conversation.
Thank you for having me. It's wonderful to be with you.
Okay. And our quote for today is from George Bernard Shaw. He says, "Beware of false knowledge. It is more dangerous than ignorance." So, my friends, today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.